Namaste, Saraswati Devi, Gaur Vani Pracharne, Nera Vishesha Shunyavadi Pastyachi Adeshatarne, Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasudhi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Welcome everyone to our questions and answers session. I'll say a few words about Srila Prabhupada, our Acharya, our founder Acharya. And while I'm doing that, our organizers here on my right, on your left, they'll pass around the questions sheet. There it is. So you can write down any question that you like. And when you've written your question down, just pass it on to the next person. And like this, after a little while, we'll take in the sheet, have a look at the questions and try and answer some while the sheet continues to circulate. And if you don't have a question but the sheet comes to you, just pass it on to the next person. So, very good. Very wonderful subject, Srila Prabhupada, the Acharya. You know, in Sanskrit language, to some extent it's still the same in Hindi, to some extent, and you know, other North Indian languages. But there are two things in this regard, there are two things. One is called Achar, and the other is called Prachar. When I say achar, don't worry, I don't mean mango achar or, you know, from Paco or whatever it is. Not that sort of achar. This is different. Achar means activity, that which is done. Prachar means speaking, and not simply speaking, but speaking in an instructive type of way. Prachar, like preaching in a spiritual or religious context, preaching, giving spiritual instruction. So there's achar and prachar then. And in this context, when the two are sort of together compared to each other, then achar means also not just activity, but achar in this context means that you can learn, you, the observer, that you can learn by observing the activities of the teacher, of the other person, that, in other words, well, if we say specifically in the case of Krishna consciousness, if you watch, if you witness and observe the life's activities of an acharya, like Srila Prabhupada, then you it is like an education, a demonstration of the particular points which you are meant to learn. Yeah. In other words, teaching by example. Yes. You just watch the person. And in one sense, you may not even need to hear or read anything in a certain sense. But if you just observe the activities of the person carefully over a little period of time, then you will learn what is Krishna consciousness. You will learn how to be, how to become Krishna conscious. And then if you emulate that yourself, if you then try to carry out those same activities yourself, you will become Krishna conscious. You'll become very Krishna conscious. You will advance greatly. And if you think about it, knowledge which is presented through the teacher's activities, in one sense, is more valuable than just knowledge given in the pracha sense of someone is just speaking and telling you it's like this, it's like that, and so on. Because when you see someone do it, and then when you see the effects in their life, and then when you apply it, the effects in your life, this is much more convincing. It has a much greater impact than someone simply telling you some things. Although, of course, to repeat spiritual knowledge and to hear spiritual knowledge is very good and very important. But therefore, because teaching through example, teaching by example, is more effective often than teaching just by speaking. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada is called the founder Acharya. And not, he is not called the founder Pracharya. Although the term is quite grammatically, linguistically valid, it's correct. Founder Pracharya would mean the founder of a spiritual institution whose teachings, spoken, communicated teachings, like spoken, written, like that, they are the foundations for the lives of the followers. So Srila Prabhupada is not called founder Pracharya, although he spoke a lot, every day, for hours, for years. He spoke a lot and wrote a lot. In this way, he communicated verbally through writing so much information, so many teachings. So to call him founder Pracharya would be fine. But we don't call him that. We call him founder Acharya, because it's more significant that he founded the Krishna consciousness movement, and he provided the foundation for it, particularly through his activities, how he lived, and all his different standards of conduct, his ways of dealing, and so on like that. So therefore he's called Founder Acharya. It's interesting, isn't it? There's a verse in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 3, verse, am I right? 21? Am I right? 21. What's 321? Devotees? Bhagavad Gita scholars? Thank you, very good. Unfortunately, we didn't have a microphone for him to use, but yad yad acharati shastas. Notice acha, yad yad acharati. This is a verbal form. You know, acha is a noun, You remember grammar from school? Nouns, verbs. You remember those things. So acha is activity, noun. Acharya refers to a person who acts in certain ways. But acharati, yad means who. And when it's repeated, yad, it means, you know, different people who. A number of different people who. Acharati is third person singular. There's a little grammar for you. Sanskrit grammar. Acharami means I do. Acharasi means you do. Acharati means he does, or she, he, she, or it does. So yad yad acharati shestas. One who acts in certain ways. Yad yad acharati shestas tat tat eve charojana sayat pramanam kurute lokas tad anuvatate. So here, can you give us the translation? Whatever actions a great man performs,
common men follow.
Common people follow.
And whatever standards he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues.
Thank you. Well done. So you got that. Yeah, give him a round of applause. Why not? It's chapter 3, verse 21. Very important verse. Prominent people, when they act in certain ways, people follow them. And whatever standards they accept, become accepted by so many other people. So, in the purport of that verse, if you've got a Bhagavad Gita at home or with you right now, you can look up that verse, 321, and you'll see. Srila Prabhupada makes this point about the importance of, you could say, walking your talk. You follow? That you actually do what you're teaching. And you don't just talk it and, you know, do something else. And Srila Prabhupada gives an interesting example in the purport that you cannot really teach people to stop smoking if you are smoking. Now, people are just going to laugh, actually. In fact, many years ago, and it was actually the mid-80s, Ramanuj Acharya Prabhu, who was here last night, some of you may know him, he lives in the temple in Chatsworth. He and I were taking part in the Bloemfontein, Orange Free State, annual agricultural fair. It's like the Rand Easter Show, but the one they have in Bloemfontein goes on for a week or so. And you can hire a stall and sell stuff. And that's what we were doing, to raise money for building our temple in Chatsworth. So there we were, all day, every day for 1 week. And across the aisle from us, like 3 meters away or 4 meters at the most, was the Cancer Society. And they were presenting, you know, distributing information and stopping people and talking to people about cancer and particularly lung cancer. And so they were emphasizing you should stop smoking. So, you know, they're just across from us and we're there for a whole week. We sort of got to know them a little bit. And we noticed that one young man from that team there, the cancer group, every hour or so, he would disappear. He would disappear. And he'd come back like 5 minutes, something 10 minutes later, just shortly afterwards. And we were discussing together initially, what happens with this man? And we thought maybe he has some bladder problem and he has to visit the bathroom more often than the average person. So anyway, so we weren't really worried about it. But one day, Ramanujacharya Prabhu went out to the bathroom, in fact, and who should he see just outside around the corner was that very young man puffing away on a cigarette, you know, like, ah, my life depends on it. So Ramanuja asked him, well, what are you doing? You're the Cancer Society. You're promoting that people must not smoke, how bad it is, etc. What's going on? And the young fellow, you know, he's only like 25 or so, he said, yeah, I know, it's really bad, but there's nothing I can do. I just have to do it every so often. So Prabhupada specifically addresses this exact point in the purport of that verse, Bhagavad Gita chapter 3 verse 21, that you cannot, how can you effectively teach people to do something, but you're not doing it, and you don't really believe it, or to not do something, if you're really into doing it, and you really want to do it, and you are doing it, how can you, you know, in a sense, it's like the vibration, the mood that you project when you're teaching. If you're being hypocritical and you actually don't really believe what you're teaching and you're not doing what you're teaching, the potency will just not be there. You follow? It'll just be kind of like empty words. Yeah. But when a person is really fully engaged in pure devotional service, particularly like Srila Prabhupada, then when he speaks, when he writes, when he expresses himself, then because it's all completely backed up in his life's activities, absolutely, then the potency is so great that when people hear him, when they see him, when they experience him directly or indirectly, it has the maximum effect. Maximum effect. Yeah. So, like, I'll go on to the questions. Are the questions coming? I'll go on to the questions in a minute, but I'll just tell you one little story and experience I had with Srila Prabhupada is that Srila Prabhupada, I think it was 1974 or maybe it was 75, in Bhaktivedanta Manor, England, Srila Prabhupada was visiting, and many devotees came from all over Europe, including the main book distributors from Germany. And they were all young brahmacharis, young men, celibate students. And they were, in their own way, kind of very powerful in their presentation of Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada really appreciated very much when his disciples tried to distribute his books. So these devotees came, and Srila Prabhupada had a private meeting with this group. And somehow I managed to sneak in. So I was there too. And Srila Prabhupada asked a question. He asked them a question. He said, "So, what is the main thing?" And there was like 20 to 25 of them there, plus me. I was sitting at the back. And just about all of them put their hands up. "Yes, Srila Prabhupada, what is the main thing?" "Book distribution." Srila Prabhupada said, "No." And wow, it really knocked the wind out of their sails. And then they tried to think of something. Preaching Srila Prabhupada, no. Chanting Hare Krishna Srila Prabhupada, no. Went on like this briefly. And then Prabhupada stopped. And Prabhupada said, "The main thing is, you must read my books. I've written them for you. And you are distributing these books. And if you don't read them, then you'll try and distribute one of these books to a person. And the person will ask you, 'What is it? What's it about?' And you will say, 'I don't know, but it's a very good book, and you should buy it.' 'I don't know, I haven't read it, but it's a very good book.'" You get the idea? It's not going to really have so much effect. And in fact, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a conversation between Lord Chaitanya and, who is it? Haridas Thakur. And Lord Chaitanya says, some people speak nicely, but their activities are not so good. And some people, they act nicely, but they don't speak so well. But you, Haridas Thakur, your activities are perfect. You speak perfectly. Therefore, you are Jagad Guru. You are the guru of the whole world for everyone. Because your activities, what you say, it's all perfect. And this is Srila Prabhupada. And this is why the Krishna consciousness movement has spread so much, as you know. And as long as his followers, and I'm not simply talking about people like me who live in temples, but I'm including all of you or many of you who I know are seriously practicing. As long as we all follow in Prabhupada's footsteps in very real terms, by following his instructions, living as he lived, and then presenting it to people, the movement, the potency will still be there, and the movement will continue spreading and increasing and increasing. You know, when Prabhupada first started, there was no temple. He was living in someone's house. When he left this world 12 years later, there was 108 temples and centers around the world. Now, or rather in I think January, February, there were 685 temples and centers around the world. And I assume since February up to now, it's increased a bit also. So if we all walk our talk and talk properly and follow Prabhupada's teachings, then we all, between us, we'll be able to help the spread of Krishna consciousness and help the world. Because let's face it, the world desperately needs help. If it wasn't for the Krishna consciousness movement, I would say it's too late, probably. But anyway, is hope. There's not hope in the politicians. Mr. Obama will save the world. Mr. Putin, what about Mr. Zuma will save the world? Harry Ball, good luck. Mr. Mugabe. Okay, here we go, some questions. I heard somewhere that Srila Prabhupada preferred Ayurvedic medication than medication from a pharmacy, which is called allopathic, incidentally. Are initiated devotees allowed to consume medicine, such as Panado, every day, every time they get a headache? Because Panado is what? Is sort of a drug. And initiated devotees have taken the vow to not consume any drugs. So our initiated devotees are allowed to consume panada. You know, just from the point of view of the English language, I think consume is the wrong word. That would mean sort of take a tub at a time. But yes, so we don't take intoxication. That is the vow. That's the vow. Not to take intoxication. And but medication, well, it's a fact. Srila Prabhupada definitely preferred Ayurvedic medication. He did. But when it was not available, like when he came to Europe, to America, and in those days, you know, 1960s, 1970s, you just could not get Ayurvedic medication outside of India at all. So sometimes he would use allopathic medication, but he would note and tell the devotees that it's not the best and it has side effects and so on like that. And he really preferred Ayurvedic medication. But now, when we talk about intoxication, I think you understand the point. We mean like recreational activities, so to speak. You know, we will drink liquor and become intoxicated. The idea is to become intoxicated, or smoke dukkha, or drink mainstay. And this is all, you could say, recreational activity. Yeah. But when we talk about medication of any sort, we're really talking about something to help cure you of a disease. Yeah. So devotees who are initiated or not initiated, devotees who have taken vows, no intoxication, they are allowed to take things like Panado, you know, aspirin, whatever it may be, within reason, particularly if it's prescribed by a doctor, a qualified doctor, and, you know, there's a real need to address some important health problem. Yeah. So that's okay. One shouldn't get into the recreational use of prescription medication, though. I heard about one doctor from Newlands West, and he would supply the narcotics users. I forget what his name was. And those, you know, the drug addicts, they would go and see him, he'd supply. So, you know, like some people drink, would you believe, you may not believe this, cough mixture. Don't do what I'm just going to say. But some people drink a bottle of cough mixture. Because usually it has codeine in it, which is some sort of, you know, affects the system strongly. So it's just a cheap thrill. So anyway, the basic point is, it's okay to use medication, even like, you know, if you have a cough or a cold, to take a cough mixture, even though it has codeine, and you may even feel some effect from it. But if it's important for curing your disease, that's okay. Yeah. But don't start thinking, you know, when I saw the word consume, I was thinking of someone getting, you know, a bottle of antibiotics, penicillin, tetracycline, whatever, augmentin, and just say, well, these antibiotics, they cure, they give you good health. Therefore, I will take a bottle a day, and then I'll have really good health. What do you think of that? Not a good idea. It'll probably kill you. If it doesn't kill you, it will ruin your digestive system. So these things should only be taken under qualified supervision. Then it's acceptable, although Ayurvedic is better. As long as, you know what? You find a qualified Ayurvedic doctor. Hare Krishna. Easier said than done, believe me. Finding a qualified Ayurvedic doctor is something like trying to find a qualified astrologer. They're really not easy to find. Yeah. They're really not easy to find. In the Gita, Lord Krishna says, only being attached to me will cause no result of sadness and pain, because attachment to me is everlasting. My question is, how do we go about loving our family, friends, and even our pets? Fido. Without getting attached to them, which is going to eventually result in sadness and pain. One of our devotees recently, a female cat, adopted them, just sort of moved in and didn't want to move out. So the lady asked me, what should we call this cat? It's a female cat. I suggested, call her Nrisinga Devi. It's the feminine form, Nrisinga Devi. So the thing is this, yes, you're right. If we're attached to Krishna, not only will there be no sadness and pain, but there'll be tremendous happiness. Yeah, just wonderful, blissful life. So what about your family, friends, and even your pets? Well, the thing is that association with devotees is a very important part of Krishna consciousness. So if your family are devotees, then it's good to keep company with them, have very nice relations in Krishna consciousness. Yeah. If your family are not devotees, try and help them to become devotees. You know, if they, after a while, they decide they don't want to, then don't sort of badger them all the time. If you've tried a bit to get them to become devotees, but it's not working, so don't just sort of browbeat them and beat them over the heads with it. But you can do things like give them prasadam regularly. Yeah. It's very beneficial. And it's very nice. Generally, give them prasadam. And invite them to some programs occasionally. You know, in many cases they may come occasionally. And it's good for them. Even if they're antagonistic, they don't want to know about it, then at least give them prasadam. You know, it is very rare that people do not like prasadam. If you meet someone who doesn't like prasadam, you must know there is something seriously wrong with them. Yeah, they're almost off the scale. When we were registering in 1975, we were registering ISKCON in South Africa, and our devotee went to Pretoria. European, South African, white South African devotee went to Pretoria to register ISKCON. So he met with the clerk, you know, the fellow behind the counter, handed over the documentation. We want to register as the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And the man looked at it, you know, with respect. He was like a typical Afrikaans bureaucrat, you know, just straight out of the textbook. One of the ones from Pretoria. Did I get it right? One of those ones. A career bureaucrat. And he looked at us, and I won't try to imitate his accent, but he said, "No, no, no. You can't be the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, ISKCON. You have to be the South African Society for Krishna Consciousness, SASKCON." Seriously. And the devotee said, "No, no, we're part of an international organization, and so, you know, this is our name, ISKCON." And the man said, "No, no, this is South Africa, SASKCON." And I went back and forth for a few minutes, and the devotee had a simply wonderful little suite in his bag. He pulled it out, and to the man's great surprise, the devotee just gave him this simply wonderful, this sweet. The man didn't know what to do. People generally didn't give him sweets when they wanted to register an organization. And he just looked at it like, what now? And the devotee said, "My wife made it for you. Please eat it." And the man looked at it from, you know, this side, that side, and he ate the whole thing in one go. And as he's chewing on it, he said, "Okay, you can be the International Society for Krishna Consciousness." That's a true story. That's the power of prasadam. Yeah. So, and if your family members, if they are like, you know, what would you say, fanatical Christians, with respect, who think that you are just from Satan, which is total rubbish, but anyway, if they're that sort of person, or if they're fanatical Muslim activists, you know, they're just getting ready to go to the Middle East to join ISIS. If your family members are like that, and they, like, you know, they persecute you, basically, then our advice would be, leave home, move out. You know, generally people move out sometime sooner or later, so maybe now would be the time to move out. But otherwise, be nice and try and help them. But be sensitive too. Yeah. There's a saying, old English saying, a man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. Yeah. So, you know, if you sort of force people and just push people to accept your point of view, just to get rid of you, they may say, okay. But it's not a good idea. So try and help them. If they're not going to accept, give them prasadam. And be nice. Be very nice. And after some time, they may see that you have become a better person through Krishna consciousness. You've become a happier person, clearer thinking person. And then they may think, wow, there must be something to this Krishna consciousness. We've had experience of many family members becoming devotees a few years later through that type of association. A few years later. Yeah. One devotee actually told me maybe 6 months ago about his father. And this is a person from Europe, European person. And his father, he became a devotee, but he was living at home, the devotee. And he would chant at home, and his father was always like, oh, why are you doing this? One day, he walked in unexpectedly, the son, not at the sort of the regular time. There was his father sitting in the lounge chanting japa on beads. And the son walked in. Wow, Dad, what's going on? And his father was so embarrassed. He said, you know, watching you over these years, you know, it really moved me. But I felt so embarrassed that I've been criticizing you so much. And now I want to start myself. I thought you might laugh at me. So he became a devotee. Okay, and pets, in regard to pets, give them a Krishna conscious name. If you have a female cat, call her Narsinga Devi or Radharani or something. Use your imagination and feed them prasadam. Yeah, feed them prasadam. As much as they'll accept, at least. They say that Srila Prabhupada is an empowered soul. Can you please elaborate on what is an empowered soul? Well, that's very important. Like we were talking about Acharya Srila Prabhupada as Acharya, and because he's living it and speaking it, there's great power behind it. Whereas if you don't live it, you just speak it, you won't be able to influence people because you won't have the power as much. So then again, even amongst devotees who are living it and preaching it, there are different levels. Yeah. It's not just when a devotee comes to the level of living it and teaching it, now they're endowed with the maximum potency. No, there are different levels and different amounts of potency. And where does that potency or empowerment come from? It comes from Krishna. Yeah. Kali Kalera Dharma Krishna Nam Sankirtan Krishna Shakti Vina Nahi Tara Pravatan. This is Chaitanya Charitamrita. The verse is saying that the prescribed process for Kali Yuga, is Krishna Nam Sankirtan, the spreading of the chanting of Krishna's names, but Krishna Shakti. Shakti means power, potency, energy. Krishna Shakti Vina Nahi. Nahi, of course, means not or no. If you don't have the Krishna Shakti, if Krishna doesn't give you power, then Tara Pravata, you won't, your attempt will not have much effect, maybe no effect. Like, a very important example indeed, in terms of Srila Prabhupada, you know, Srila Prabhupada had his own contemporaries, other devotees, his godbrothers, who were also disciples of the same spiritual master as him, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. Prabhupada was the only one who was able to spread Krishna consciousness all around the world. Not that the others were not chanting Hare Krishna, they were. They were sort of doing all these things to some degree, but not like how Srila Prabhupada was. Therefore, they were not able to spread Krishna consciousness around the world. The vast majority of them were not able to spread it at all. And some of them could spread it a little, but just nothing like Prabhupada. Really, you know, the effect he had on the world is just in another dimension altogether compared to any of his contemporaries, or even, frankly, all of them put together. Why? Because he was empowered by Krishna, not just because he was very clever or very strict or something like that. Although he was very clever and he was very strict, but not just because that main thing, Krishna empowered him, therefore he was able to influence the whole world. Okay, please tell us of your initiation by Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna. I will tell you briefly about my second initiation by Srila Prabhupada. Okay, second initiation. At the time of second initiation, you're given the sacred thread. Here it is, see? This white thread goes across the left shoulder, across the chest, and down around the right thigh. So the fire sacrifice was one day. Prabhupada was not present in the fire sacrifice. One of his senior disciples performed it. And then that disciple of Prabhupada, senior disciple, he put the threads on all of us who were receiving second initiation. Let me step back one step, actually, before that. About a week, or no, actually a couple of weeks before the initiation, Prabhupada called all the devotees who were going to be initiated into his room, including myself, and interviewed us as a group. And Srila Prabhupada said, "So, are you all chanting 16 rounds?" Everyone was, except a couple of young girls, they're sort of late teens to 20, prone to giggle a lot. Don't take that personally if you're late teens to 20. But anyway, they were. Sometimes Prabhupada would call that type of young girl a gigglet. A gigglet. So these two girls giggled and said, "No, Srila Prabhupada, we're not chanting 16 rounds." There was at least a dozen of us there You know what Srila Prabhupada did? He cancelled the whole initiation for everyone. Everyone. Including the majority of us who were chanting 16 rounds. You can imagine those two young girls were not terribly popular after that. Anyway, but it's 2 weeks, couple of weeks later, the initiation happened. So Prabhupada was not there for the fire sacrifice, and this devotee put the threads on our shoulders like that. And the next morning, straight after Mangal Arati, 5 o'clock in the morning, we went to Srila Prabhupada, one by one, individually. And I was the first one to get the mantras. When you get second initiation, you get 7 mantras, Gayatri mantras, plural. 7 Gayatri mantras. You have to get them directly from the spiritual master. So I went in, and Prabhupada saw I already had my thread on. And, you know, I didn't know about the technicalities and how it all works and the systems. Prabhupada looked at me and said, "Why have you got your thread on?" Why? Well, I didn't know why, or why not, or I didn't know, so I didn't actually say anything. I was kind of just stunned. And Prabhupada said, "Who put the thread on you?" And I said the name of the devotee who had done it. And Prabhupada said, "Why did he do that?" Again, you know, stunned. I didn't know why he did it. I had no idea at all. And Prabhupada said, "I wanted to put it on myself." Then he called for the temple president. At the time, in that temple, there were about 400 devotees living, because normally there was maybe 80 to 100, but many devotees had come from all around Europe because Prabhupada was there. He would generally just come to England when he was traveling from India to America or America back to India. He'd stop in England. So, and the temple president was Mukunda, now Mukunda Goswami, one of the original devotees, disciples of Prabhupada. Prabhupada called him in. He was busy. Busyness personified, you know, keeping everything together with so many devotees. Prabhupada called him in. Prabhupada said, "Why has this boy got his thread on?" He was also stunned. He didn't know. And Prabhupada said, "Why not? Why? You should know. You're the temple president. You should know everything that is happening." Oh, it was pretty heavy. And I could just throw in a little side point, is that one also very, very senior devotee, Badri Narayan Swami, who's a GBC now and who was a temple president in San Diego, America, for many years, like 20 years or more. When he first became temple president, he went for a morning walk with Srila Prabhupada, and he wanted to get some instruction from Prabhupada how to be the temple president. So he asked Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, "What should a temple president do? What are his duties?" and so on. Srila Prabhupada looked at him. Prabhupada said, "Temple president is the person who, when anything goes wrong in the temple, it is his fault." So there was Mukunda at the time, Prabhu, just getting the source from Srila Prabhupada. And there I was thinking, "Wow, I'm glad I'm not the temple president." And then Mukunda went out again, and then Prabhupada gave me the mantras, 7 mantras, which I had never encountered before. And Prabhupada, you know, they were on a sheet. Prabhupada sort of rattled them off and said, "Now you chant them." What? So I had to repeat the mantras, which I'd never seen before. This slightly complicated Sanskrit. Yeah, by the grace of the Lord, I got it right. But I was really worried, my God, am I going to make a mistake? Then he showed me, because we chant each mantra 10 times. And there's a way. You don't just count in your head, okay, that was 1, okay, that was 2. You count on your fingers. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. It's a system. And Prabhupada showed me that. And I'd never seen it before, not one time in this lifetime. And Prabhupada just literally went, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, now you do it. Back to being stunned. And I thought, oh my God, if I get it wrong, what's going to happen? But anyway, I got it right. By the grace of the Lord. That was my second initiation. By Srila Prabhupada. Okay, what should I do? Should I answer one more? Is the next person here? Okay. I'm going to answer one more. Try to answer. Our dear Lord had 17,108 so-called wives. Explain this phenomenon. Well, he actually had 16,000, not 17. But anyway, that's by the way. The thing is this, Krishna did not spend one day with wife number 1, then second day with wife number 2, third day with wife number 3, and then through 16,108. You get the idea. How many years would that take? Well, it would take 16,108 days, and then you'd be back to wife number 1. Hi, nice to see you again. Been missing you. But if you divide a quick calculation, 16,108 divided by 365, but 366 on leap years, and it works out to, I don't know, but it's in the vicinity of 45 years, give or take a couple. Did you work it out? 44.13 years, and you'd be back to wife number 1. Hi, how you doing? You remember me? So Krishna, because he's Krishna, because he's God, he expanded himself into 16,108 forms, and he lived with each wife all the time. That's how you do it. But in order to do that, you have to be Krishna, God. Don't any of you young men there start thinking, you know, I should follow in Krishna's footsteps. At least 2. Maybe, well, I'll follow in Mr. Zuma's footsteps. 4.
7.
7? Okay. Whatever it is. And probably a few casual ones on the side. You know, I wouldn't be surprised. So, no. Stick with 1 wife. And it may sometimes not be so easy. You know, ask anyone who's been married for 2 years or more. But sometimes it's not easy. In the beginning you think, this angel I have married, she has descended from the planets of the angels. And she may think, this hero I have married, he has descended from the planets of the heroes, and he's just going to look after me. Sorry, folks, we hear that reality is somewhat different. So anyway, stick with one wife, one husband, and really work together in Krishna consciousness. Okay. Yeah. Yes. And, you know, just to give another little perspective on it, I think it's Srila Jiva Goswami says in his commentary on the rasa dance pastime, there's six chapters in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam about the rasa dance. And in one of the purports there, Jiva Goswami makes the point that Krishna, we may think, 16,108 wives, wow, that's a lot, that's really a lot. But Jiva Goswami says, in Goloka Vrindavan, the gopis, the cowherd girls, whom Krishna has his most intimate relationships with, Jiva Goswami makes the point that there are different circles, different groups around each other, then around again and around. And there are many, there's really a lot. And he makes the point that in the first circle, the closest circle, there are about 7 billion gopis. In the first circle. And then what about the second one? Because it's encircling, surrounding the first circle. And then the third, and we're talking about big numbers. For Krishna, it's no problem, don't worry. How did he manage? Don't worry. But you, we, let's just try and practice Krishna consciousness properly, according to Prabhupada's teachings, according to his example, under the instruction, guidance of his dedicated followers, and we'll be very happy. And at the end of this life, one morning, devotees, friends, one morning, you will wake up, we will wake up, we will be in Goloka Vrindavan. Hare Bol. Thank you all very much. Nice to be with you. Don't go away. Next is His Holiness Vedavyas Priya Maharaj from India, Bharat Singh. Yes, he is coming. And he's a really wonderful devotee, disciple of Srila Prabhupada, and he will address you. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.